106.7 Phoenix FM.
Good morning and welcome to Real People Talk Autism. I'm Tony Langdon and I'll be hosting the show as Beck is unfortunately not able to make it this week. Before we go on with the show, a little bit about the station and then the show. We're on Phoenix FM at www.phoenixfm.org.au, where you can hit the Listen Live link on the top right of the page if you're out of the Bendigo area. Of course, we're broadcasting in Bendigo on 106.7 on your FM dial. And we have a Facebook page at Phoenix, so just look up Phoenix FM and you should be able to find the Facebook page. Also, the show has its own Facebook page. Look up Real People Talk Autism on Facebook and you can find us there and like us. We have a Twitter feed at Talk Autism Radio Oz, I believe. Beck's the expert on the Twitter stuff. And we do have a podcast. This show will be up on podcast probably later on today at realpeopleasd.podomatic.com.
There is no place to hide this time. Don't let affection stray away. You can be so demanding, 'cause I'm not here to stay. You know there'll be no longer when I'm not here to say. I can't be holding on to you if I believe in saving ways. I thought it's could be fun. Instead, the whole thing's blown up in my face. In time there'll be no other. Oh, how am I to say no, no? It's love time. Ending way that never died. But the hurt, the joy, you know we used to have so much. You understood me. You never really understood me.
Crossfire, burn!
106.7 Phoenix FM.
And good morning, and thank you for tuning in this morning. I'm Bec Kelly, and you've tuned in to listen to Real People Talk Autism. Anyway, let's get on with the show. I have a guest coming into the studio soon. She's on her way. She had to travel a bit far today, and she's had one of those mornings, which we all can probably understand. Anyway, a bit about the station and the show. So you can go to the Phoenix FM website, which is www.phoenixfm.org.au, and up in the right-hand corner, there's a little Listen Live tab. So it means that if you click on it at 9:30 in the morning, wherever you are in the world, 9:30 our time here in Bendigo, you can hear us live on the web, anywhere in the world. Technology is great. Also, if you've got any emails, any questions, anything that you would like to say, any recommendations, music requests, anything you would like me to read out, if you're a not-for-profit organisation, you've got anything coming up that you would like promoted, please send it through to feedback@phoenixfm.org.au. Also, going back to the website, phoenixfm.org.au, if you're interested in becoming a volunteer here at Phoenix, we're a lovely group of people here, and there's some absolutely amazing shows, but you don't actually have to just, you know, do your own show. There's all different things that you can be a part of here at Phoenix. It's a wonderful family. Also, we have a Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/realpeopletalkautism. And we're also on Twitter at Talk Autism Radio Oz. And also our fantastic podcaster and co-host, Tony Langdon, who is not here today. He's here in spirit. And I think he's got a pretty big weekend, and he hasn't been feeling very well. Everyone's got this dreaded lurgy at the moment. So get better soon, Tones. Anyway, he will pop the podcast for today's show up on our Facebook page. But if you're wanting to actually, you're not on Facebook and you're wanting to get the podcast sent to you, you can actually go to realpeopleasd.podomatic.com and subscribe to our podcast. And as soon as Tones gets it up, then you will get sent an email with the link to the podcast. So that's pretty cool. And he does endeavour to try to get them up as soon as he possibly can. But usually if he's got a big weekend, he'll let you know if the podcast is going to come up late. So, yeah. Anyway, Phoenix FM has a Facebook page as well, which is, I'm pretty sure it's www.facebook.com/PhoenixFM. Also, we have an SMS number, which is pretty cool. So if you call SMS 04777 51358, so don't call it, just SMS it, and send your message through to that number, 04777 51358. Your text message will be converted into an email and sent to the feedback Phoenix FM email here. So I will get it whilst I'm on air. Okay, cool. Well, whilst we wait for our guest to arrive, and you know, we're going to talk about a few things today. I want to talk about neurodiversity, because neurodiversity is a big thing in our community that is getting a lot of attention, and it's something that we really need to be looking more closely at when it comes to our kids, as well as adults, teenagers, but also other children too, typically developing children. So we need to sort of be looking at that. But before I do, I'm going to go to Google University. A new thing I'm going to be doing every Saturday morning is Googling autism and then clicking on news and seeing what comes up. So one of the first things that pops up, so this is the news in general when it comes to autism that's according to Google, is from a where are we? It is from the Medical Daily. All these pop-ups have come with it. It's like, good Lord, go away. And all these ads too, but that's okay. It's from the Medical Daily, so medicaldaily.com, and it's titled The Magic of Reading Intervention in Autism. Kids see improvement in brain activity after a reading course. So this is how it reads. The brain is a plastic, flexible organ, meaning there's always a chance to rewrite it in a way to improve its function, no matter how old you are. Physical activity paired with extended periods of disciplined focus in brain exercises, reading, writing, solving problems, is typically the way to do so. Researchers wanted to test out the notion of brain plasticity in children who are on the autism spectrum, and to see if 10 weeks of intensive reading intervention could strengthen brain function. They found that the children with autism, who tend to have impaired connectivity between parts of the brain's reading area, improved both their overall brain activity and reading comprehension after the intervention, which involved face-to-face reading instruction for 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. Oh, that's a bit long, but anyway. The authors stress that they refer to it as a magic of intervention, or the benefits of taking control and trying to overcome some of the negative aspects of autism. Oh, another pop-up blast. This study is the first to do reading intervention with ASD children using brain imaging techniques, and the findings reflect the plasticity of the brain. Rajesh Khanna, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Alabama in Birmingham and lead author of the study, said in a press release, "Some parents think if their children is 8 or 10 years old when diagnosed, the game is lost. When I stress constantly is the importance of intervention and the magic of intervention on the brain in general and brain connectivity in particular." The researchers measured boosted activity in parts of the children's brain that had to do with language and visual spatial processing in the left hemisphere of the brain after the 10-week course. They also found that there was increased brain activity and connectivity in two language areas, the left middle temporal gyrus and the left inferior frontal gyrus. The ASD brain processing after intervention looks richer with visual, semantic and motor coding that is reflected by more active visual activity and involvement in the motor areas, Khanna said in the press release. Previous research has examined the impact of early intervention in children with autism. One recent study published last year found that if a child is diagnosed early enough within 18 months of their birth and receives intervention, they can actually reverse some of the symptoms associated with autism. Kids who received intervention during the first year of life had fewer language delays and developmental impairments, the study found. So that source came from Khanna, and it's titled The Impact of Reading Intervention on Brain Responses Underlying Language in Children with Autism, and it was printed in Autism Research 2015. They still can't get the language right, can they, these researchers? Anyway, now, autism, no barrier to full-time work for Wollongong man. So this was in the ABC Local on the 25th of June, and it's written by Justin Huntsdale. A man by the name of Rocco has educated an entire workplace about autism and proved that it isn't a barrier to earning full-time employment. Yesterday, the 23-year-old Wollongong man signed his first work contract, which he earned on his own merit. You know, someone has made a special impact on a workplace when people cry while talking about the positive impact he's had on the place. That's what's happened yesterday when Department of Education representative Bill Reid spoke of the impact Rocco has made on his work colleagues. He has a quality I can't put into words, and he has an ability to immediately lift the mood of the workplace from the second he walks in the door, he said. He works to a wonderful standard and a speed where it's not noticeable that he has a disability. You've seen how people are feeling here. We've never had anything like that in the office, and I doubt we'll ever see anything like it again, and I think that's very special. Rocco has autism, which means he finds it difficult to communicate with people as well as form relationships and use language. But with an enormous amount of dedication and a little guidance from his employment advisor, Jess Parks, from Essential Employment and Training, he has secured full-time employment at the Department of Education as an administrative assistant, entirely on his own merit. I'm trying not to cry, and I'll probably get out of here and bawl, but the It's the most rewarding day I've had since being in this job. It's been a 2-year journey and it's been a great one, Jess said. I met Rocco about 2 years ago and saw a lot of very good qualities, his enthusiasm, his motivation and lots of qualities the workforce is looking for. For Rocco, it's a major step towards gaining more control over his life. Since starting full-time work, he's been catching the bus independently and is saving up for a car and will soon start taking driving lessons. It's a very exciting day for me. It's good to be back here and everyone's so nice and friendly to me, he said. It's good to find a job and work with nice people I know around the office because autism has been a barrier before to find work. It was challenging. So what was the impact on the family? Well, Rocco's mum, Sue, was in the Wollongong Department of Education office to watch her son sign his contract as colleagues paid tribute to him. It's absolutely fabulous because it's such an achievement over the years with him. It's something that will help him socially and with his communication, and it's a confidence builder for him, and we're so proud of him. She says his social skills have improved and he is less reserved since working full time. Communication is a big barrier indeed, and people with autism tend to isolate themselves quite a lot. Slowly he's putting himself in there with social events and he feels part of the team, and that's a really good thing. He really enjoys his colleagues' company and he loves chatting to the other workers around the office. These sorts of barriers we're overcoming. So, congratulations, Rocco. It's pretty cool. He's working for the Department of Ed too, which is quite funny. But anyway, good on him. There was a really great article that I read. Where is it? Okay, here it is. This one appeared in the Daily Mail. Some people look down on the Daily Mail, but this and it's titled C-sections don't cause autism. No link exists between delivery mode and the condition, landmark study declares. So it was written by Ben Spencer, who is the medical correspondent for the Daily Mail, on the 26th of June. And it reads, giving birth via cesarean section does not make a child more likely to be autistic, scientists have established. Previous research has found a statistical link between C-sections and a child being on the autistic spectrum, but the latest findings suggest that the circumstances in which a child is born is unlikely to actually cause autism. The study published in the medical journal JAMA Psychiatry instead suggests that an autistic child is more likely require a cesarean because of some unknown genetic or environmental factor. It was at the Irish Centre for Fetal and Neonatal Transitional Research in Cork. Their researchers re-examined data that had previously shown children born by C-section were 21% more likely to be diagnosed with autism. The team went further than the initial analysis and looked at whether the autistic children had siblings who were also autistic. A large factor causing autism is thought to be in someone's genes. When the scientists analysed data from the children's brothers and sisters, they were able to estimate the extent of the genetic factor. By taking this into account, the statistical association to the cesarean section disappeared. Study leader Dr. Ali Kashan said because the association between birth by cesarean section and autistic spectrum disorder did not persist in the sibling control analysis, we can conclude that there is no causal association. It's more likely that birth by cesarean section is related to some unknown genetic or environmental factor that leads to increased risk of both cesarean section and autism spectrum. The findings were welcomed by British experts. Professor Andrew Whitelaw of the University of Bristol said it is important and in a robust study. The fact that this is the largest study by a long way, nearly 2.7 million children born in Sweden, a country with all of its residents on a database with a personal number that follows them through all official interactions, gives robustness. Furthermore, databases in Sweden can be linked to over many years across generations and between siblings while still protecting personal confidentiality. Also, the observed association between cesarean section and autism could be adjusted to according to whether a sibling had a diagnosis of autism or not. For many years, there has been strong evidence that there was a genetic contribution to autism. When adjustment was made for sibling autism, there was no association between cesarean section and autism. There is good evidence that cesarean section does not cause autism spectrum condition. So I'm just trying to sort of edit some of the language in these as I'm reading them. But anyway, so, you know, I had a conversation probably about 3 years ago with an author who talks about autism and diet and gut relations and things like that. And, you know, we talked about the vaccination debate as well. And I said to her, well, what about those children who weren't vaccinated and who weren't and whose parents weren't vaccinated? How can we explain that? And she said, well, usually it's traumatic birth or C-sections. Well, that's now kind of being disputed. So, anyway. All right, I might play a track. I'm going to play a song by a band called NERD. This was pretty much what's put Pharrell Williams on the map, this band. It's a track called Rockstar, so enjoy it, and I'll be back soon.
The voice of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
Welcome to First Period, maggots. Physical education. For the next 42 hours, your butt belongs to me.
I will not tolerate wusses.
Do I make myself clear?
Worm!
What is your major malfunction?
You think the way you live's okay. You think posing will save the day. You think we don't see that you're burning. Better call your boy.
You don't have to ever quit. You think that you can get away with it. You think the light won't be ever lit. It's almost over now, almost over now. Something on your chest, better get it off. There'll be no one left when we set it off. We ain't gonna take it no more. Since it's almost over now, almost over now.
You had plenty of time. There was no rush. But it was your dream.
Better get it off. There'll be no one left when we set it off. We ain't gonna take it no more. Since it's almost over now, almost over now.
Just better get it off.
Yeah.
Set it off.
Look, it's almost over now, almost over now.
You don't succeed because you hesitate. You think we're flying.
Believe that?
Uh-huh.
Well, if not, for you,
it's almost over now, almost.
kids laughing at? I'll give you something to laugh at. Well, now they give me 50.
The voice of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
And I'm back, and that was Nerd with Rockstar. So now, people, I guess I should explain what neurodiversity is. I'm going to play an audio from a guy who's pretty cool, and he's on the spectrum, and he talks about neurodivergence and neurodiversity. But I guess, well, okay, what does it mean to be neurodivergent? Okay, so if we look at the Urban Dictionary, so if we Google, you know, neurodivergence, and the first thing that pops up is in the Urban Dictionary. So the top definition, a person who has a developmental disorder and or mental illness. Amy, who has Asperger's, prefers to think of herself as neurodivergent rather than flawed or ill. Peter is schizophrenic, and he also thinks neurodivergent is a better way to describe his brain because it does not it doesn't label him. Sam is both autistic and bipolar and uses neurodivergent rather because it allows them to talk about their experiences as both non-holistic and non-mentality healthy in a way that doesn't carry a bunch of extra judgments about what's good or normal. So I have a lot of people who I'm friends with who identify as neurodivergent, or and I think when it comes to neurodiversity, we need to be looking at the model of neurodivergence a lot more closely. I've found a really great audio on educating in a neurodiverse world, and how to educate different types of thinkers. There's a really great book, and I've spoken about it on the show before, called Neurodiversity in the Classroom, and it's about adopting a model of education and a style of teaching that can be used for all teachers, all students, not just those who are different kinds of thinkers. So the way that I look at things is that we need to be focusing on the strengths of the student and not so much on as the weakness. Children already start school at a deficit, and so what they schools do is they focus on the things that the kids are not so good at, and they make them go over and over and over again till they try and perfect and make them good at that. So say if a child like myself, when I was a kid at school, I hated maths because I just couldn't get the numbers side of things. So they give you heaps of maths classes. If you're not good at it and you don't like it, you're not going to want to go. So instead of that, they should have focused more with me on the drama side of things and the arts. I should have been doing more classes when it comes to dramatic arts and visual arts, because that's something that I loved. And then slowly introducing the whole side of things when it comes to mathematics and numbers. I would have been able to adapt a lot better to that. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more too, and when my guest gets here, we're going to talk a little bit about what happens when you take your child in for an assessment and the doctors get it wrong, which happens all too often.
The voice of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
106.7 Phoenix FM.
Now, I am going to play you an audio called Educating a Neurodiverse World, and it's presented by a guy called Brian Kinghorn. It was presented in July of last year, so just over a year ago, just under a year ago, sorry, and it was given at a local TEDx event produced independently of the TED conferences. So what kind of world would we have if we all realised what kind of mind we had and began appreciating it? What if we did the same for others? In this talk, Brian Kinghorn champions the cause of neurodiversity, arguing that there is not just one standard issue brain. Having an autism spectrum diagnosis, PhD candidate Brian Kinghorn advocates for greater understanding and acceptance and reminds us that having that different does not have to mean less. Brian Kinghorn is pursuing a doctorate in measurement and evaluation at a teacher's college at Columbia's University. Kinghorn holds a BS in mathematics from Arcadia University and an MA in statistics from Columbia University. Besides scholarly pursuits and philosophical debate, Brian enjoys mindfulness meditation and is an Aikido practitioner. So that's pretty cool. So enjoy this. It's a bit different, and hopefully you'll have a little bit more of an understanding on how to educate someone in a neurodiverse world. Different kinds of thinkers, guys. Keep your mind open to it.
Of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
Today, I'm going to talk to you about neurodiversity. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the term, first consider biodiversity. Our planet has billions of life forms, all kinds of animals, plants, etc. Even within humans, there's immense variation in skin color, eye color, hair color, body features. Do you think there would be just one standard issue brain? Neurodiversity is the philosophy and burgeoning civil rights movement that many conditions we think of as disorders, disabilities, are actually natural expressions of variation of the human brain and mind, giving rise to various cognitive orientations. As Temple Grandin says, different, not less. Let's take autism, for example. Autistics have incredible attention to fine detail, pattern recognition, motion perception, long memories. Many are attracted to systematic, technical fields like programming and engineering. Silicon Valley is full of them. Then there's the so-called attention deficit disorder. These people are very high energy, divergent thinking, often creative. They tend to be risk-seeking, so they do well in areas of business and as entrepreneurs. Further, there's dyslexia. These people have good peripheral vision, able to see wide, big picture, whole systems. They often do well in creative pursuits like art, design, theater. I am autistic, on the spectrum, as they say, diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome at age 21. I don't think verbally. I think visuospatially, pictures, patterns. It's quite challenging to compress my thoughts and articulate them within the confines of language. That's why I'm using so many visuals here to give you some insight. Thinking in images and patterns has served me well in math and statistics. I can visualize quantities as lines and curves, just look at equations and move the symbols around with my mind. Could I draw on a whiteboard and my bathroom mirror? We can look back in history and find some of the greatest minds had traits like these. Scientists like Newton, Tesla, Turing, Curie, Einstein. In the arts, Mozart, Van Gogh, Glenn Gould. Writers and poets, Hans Christian Andersen, Emily Dickinson. Philosopher, Immanuel Kant. Statesman, Thomas Jefferson. It seems that for success in science or art, a dash of autism is essential. Now, these people died long ago, so we can't know exactly what their diagnoses were or would have been. But what we do know is they were anything but neurologically typical. They were eccentric, and it's thanks to their unique minds they're able to accomplish such feats. Though I'm concerned, Where will the next generation of great thinkers and innovators come from? Genius is rarely recognized in its own time, especially in this society that favors normality, conformity to what is typical, ordinary, expected, average, as if this were the highest ideal. People who are creative, think differently, outside the box, are often ostracized and scorned because they don't fit the social order. Studies have shown that such children are given poor marks by teachers who favor compliant satisfiers. Now we have children as young as 3 being medicated as chemical restraint. Behavioral interventions designed to suppress their natural feelings force assimilation just so they can appear indistinguishable from their peers. Quoting Faith Jegaday, in all honesty, the pursuit of normality is the ultimate sacrifice of potential. And I would add, the surest way to corrupt a youth, according to Nietzsche. Now, to realize how we got such a system, we just need to look back, as Sir Ken Robinson noted. Our school system came from the Industrial Revolution, designed to run along factory lines, prepare children to become factory workers. But the factory model assumes a homogeneous lot of raw materials, processed simultaneously in batches, moving along, and at the end of the line, they are sorted and graded to see which units are best fit for consumption. Because in the factory, quality just means consistency. Our assessment methods come from the dawn of the 20th century during the eugenics movement. The presumption that some people are just inherently better than others. They have latent ability. We cannot see, but you can have more or less of it. And the purpose of the test is to uncover these supposed differences. It's always been about sorting and classifying people, giving them ranks. A competition to see who is close to or far from the norm, often the average set by some prior reference sample. That's how IQ works. They can't have a test where everybody performs the same, good or bad. Because if the test doesn't discriminate you from your peers, then it doesn't have any test information. But we don't all come out of the same mold. As in this example, you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree. It will spend its whole life believing that it's stupid. Though we could turn the tables, like in this picture, an octopus playing with puzzle blocks underwater, and at the other tank, a cat. A cat that has drowned. A cat that may otherwise be an excellent climber fails in this situation. It goes to show the notion of disability isn't necessarily about inherent flaws, but different sets of abilities and a mismatch with the current environment and tasks at hand. As that test may be reliable, valid, to compare the octopus to a larger population of octopi and ranking it within. But all too often, an instrument calibrated to just one population is taken as a general test of aptitude, applied broadly, and then somehow find entire races, ethnicities, and other demographics are deemed inferior. It's self-fulfilling prophecy. You might try and justify it by saying it's meritocracy. They've been measured, evaluated, and found lacking. But here, measurement is just a convenient pretext to reinforce classism. I should know. I'm getting a PhD in this field, and it desperately needs reform. Can we allow such archaic systems to persist in the 21st century? Clearly, we need to change. And we can't wait on Superman to come fix our schools. We must change, and we can change, but not if we keep using the same old thinking that created the problem, as Einstein noted. There's no easy answer. We can't just throw money at it. We have to break it down, rebuild, redesign. Think hard. What do we want our schools to accomplish? What should be their purpose? I, for one, don't want to see schools that run like factories, treat teachers like assembly line workers, or worse yet, the machinery. No. In my vision, young students learn their basics, like reading and writing. But beyond that, it's a much more individualized, tailored approach. students could have greater liberty to pursue their interests and talents. They would be in competition with no one but themselves, challenged, motivated to grow, develop, and learn more than they knew the day before. As my sensei puts it, don't beat others, beat yourself. We could do away with the large, high-stakes summary judgments and deploy a more ethical use of testing. Formative, diagnostic assessments based on objective criteria that show how far you've progressed in mastering some domain. They should be frequent, ongoing, useful to guide teachers and students, like GPS. Show where you are, help you find where you're going. Then maybe we could have a wonderful society where all kinds of people with all kinds of minds, abilities, talents, perspectives would work and come together like a grand orchestra and create a world far more beautiful than any one mind could. A world of neurodiversity and neuroharmony. I'm going to conclude now with a poem that captures this theme. It was a great inspiration for me in making this talk. There are all kinds of jobs to be done in our world, so it's a good thing that we have all kinds of minds to do them. Luckily, every kind of mind has some kinds of mind work that it can do to make the world a much better place. But first, we all need to understand our own minds. Wouldn't it be great if we could all feel good about our own minds? Wouldn't it be fun if we could all enjoy and respect each other's kinds of minds? Then we might live in a world where all kinds of minds would be happy and proud to be living all kinds of lives.
The voice of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
more than would a muddy old river or reclining Buddha. But thank God I'm only watching the game, controlling it. I don't see you guys rating the kind of mate I'm contemplating. I'd let you watch, I would invite you, but the queens we use would not excite you. So you better go back to your bars, your temples, your massage parlors.
One night in Bangkok, in the world star oyster. The bars are temples, but the pearls ain't free. You'll find a god in every golden oyster. A little special, little history. I can feel an angel sliding up to me. One night in Bangkok makes a hard man humble. Not much between despair and ecstasy.
And I'm back. I hope you enjoyed that little 10-minute TED presentation on neurodiversity when it comes to education. I think that's really important, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on. But right now, I say this quite a bit to a lot of my guests, I'm popping another cherry here in the studio. For the very first time, I would like to welcome Kylie into the studio. Kylie is a mum to two boys, one who is autistic, and we're going to hear a little bit about that. But firstly, I would like to welcome Kylie. Hi, Kylie. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Stop twiddling. It's fine. You'll be fine. Just breathe. It's cool. We're all good in here. We're so laid back and relaxed. Don't worry. In about 20 or 30 seconds, you're going to forget there's a mic in front of you. You'll be fine. Do you know, when I started the show, I put the presentation to the studio about having this show on air, and I went to Sarah Hansford and I said, I really want you to join me as a co-host on the show. She's like, oh no, God, I can't. For about the first 3 months, she sat in that chair opposite me and she didn't say a word. But then once she started talking, couldn't stop her. And she's here in spirit today. She's actually given me an article, which I'm going to read out a little bit later, about dentists and autism. But first, Kylie, thanks for coming in, because I know you've travelled a fair distance to get here today. So I'm really, really happy that you're here, because I love having people in the studio with me, because it just gets so boring talking to yourself at a microphone. And also, I think what you've got to say is really important, because we talk a lot about the diagnosis and going through that, well, kind of like a journey when you're looking at getting your child diagnosed. And the one thing that I've come across quite a lot, especially here in Bendigo, is that we're finding a lot of families who are getting having a lot of trouble getting the diagnosis. Sometimes specialists get it wrong. The gut feeling of parents usually is the right feeling, but yet the specialists tell us over and over again, oh no, it's this, oh no, it's that, you know. And but there are parents out there like yourself that just go, nah, you're so wrong. So I guess I just want to start by asking you a little bit about, because you've got two beautiful boys. I know your boys. They're absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous boys. And now, so from the time your son was born, did you have any idea that maybe he was a little bit different?
Yeah. So from about 2, I knew that there was something.
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure what it was.
Yeah.
I thought maybe ADHD.
Yeah.
Because that's in our family history. But yeah, the tantrums and pedantic about clothing and shoelaces and
because the shoelaces is a big thing, because we talked about this the other day.
But I didn't know anything about autism, so I hadn't even thought along that line. So I was thinking that it was just the ADHD.
Yeah. And so when did you start looking at, what's going on with my child? Why is he doing this? Why, you know, like, did you get like a little bit of a red flag that went, oh, okay, I need an answer here? Was there like a defining moment for you where you went,
there was,
yeah, I need to know?
There was. So when my mum passed away while she was babysitting my two boys, not long after that, Cody started displaying, I'll say, unusual behaviours.
Yeah. How old was he?
4.
Okay, yeah.
When Mum passed away. But it took 2 years from then,
yeah,
to get a diagnosis.
So did you sort of, I mean, you know, with those behaviours, what sort of things did he display? And obviously, please feel free to say, oh, no, I'd rather not talk about it.
That's okay.
But did he?
So he was doing things like stealing eggs out of the fridge and hiding and cracking all of them and then hiding them, or putting rice in a bowl and putting it in the microwave, hoarding food, just unusual things like that that made me think, okay, I thought grief, he was close to Mum, I thought maybe it was just the grief from losing his nan. And then he started to have epileptic seizures.
Yeah.
And so we had to medicate, and that became the focus then. The behaviours were still there, but the focus then became on the epilepsy.
Do you think when he was medicated for the epilepsy that maybe once the epilepsy was under control with the medication, that the behaviours became more prominent then?
Yep.
Because of
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So whilst we were seeing the neurologist at the Children's for the epilepsy, we were also discussing the behaviour issues that we were having. And he recommended that we go back and see a paediatrician again, which we did, and he recommended that he thought maybe it was Asperger's.
Yeah.
And recommended that we see a specialist in that area.
Richard Eisenmeyer.
Yep, Richard.
He's one of the best. Absolutely.
So I spoke to Richard, who said I desperately needed to see somebody, but his books were full, so he referred me to a specialist in Melbourne.
Yeah.
One of his colleagues, so that started our journey on seeing her for probably 6 months we saw her, and she was finding it difficult to make an absolute diagnosis based on the fact that he was medicated for his epilepsy and thought that that medication might have been masking his symptoms. So we were asked if we were comfortable with removing him from his medication so she could see how he was without it, which we chose to do.
Yeah.
For a month. And
did the seizures return?
No, which we were lucky in that month we didn't have any. And then just with travel, it was difficult getting down to Melbourne all the time and with his behaviours being the way that they were.
Mm.
So we then got transferred to someone in Bendigo. So she happily then gave me a diagnosis and said, oh, look, I think that I'd be comfortable now giving you a diagnosis of Asperger's, and then transferred us to CAMHS in Bendigo to try and get some more help.
Yeah.
And then our paediatrician in Bendigo left, so I had to find a new paediatrician. The second paediatrician that we saw questioned my diagnosis, and so I then had to go through CAMHS to get a second diagnosis.
Mm. At this stage, how old was your son? How old was Cody?
At this stage, Cody had turned 7 by now.
So you'd missed out on funding.
Yeah, got no funding. Had a lot of doors closed in our face, as you do with trying to get help with anything. And then, so I finally got in. By this stage, Cody's behaviours had gotten quite bad and he was quite aggressive and we were seeing him absconding from school and things like that. So by this stage, I was pulling my hair out.
Yeah.
And then spoke to a lady at CAMHS through their diagnosis side.
Yeah.
And normally I think they would put you through testing and put Cody through testing, and we'd already seen the psychiatrist and all the people that we needed to see. And she was our last stop, and she just did an interview with me and said, look, I don't need to do a diagnosis for Cody. You've already got your diagnosis, and I'm happy to give you a letter to support that he absolutely has Asperger's.
See, what I find sort of going back to when you spoke to Richard Eisenmeyer, and then he put you on to one of his colleagues, and she diagnosed Asperger's in your son. What gets me is that when you then take the child to a paediatrician here in Bendigo, and they go, "We question it. We don't think that this is right. When these people have years of experience in doing this, and it's happening still here in Bendigo, there's a woman I know who took her daughter to the Olga Tennison Autism Research Centre in Melbourne. Now, these guys are the top of their field, especially in early identification. You know, they know their stuff. And she took her daughter there, and they made a diagnosis. Her daughter's two, and they made a diagnosis of autism. Yes, but the thing is they use a team of psychologists to do the assessment, and then what then happens is it has to get signed off by a paediatrician. She took the assessment to a paediatrician here in Bendigo, and that paediatrician refused to sign off on the diagnosis, saying things like, "Oh, well, you're just wanting to label your child. You're just, you know," it's almost like the parents start to question, "Oh, really? Is it me? Because I've already got a child with autism. Here I am getting this one assessed. Is it me? Am I just seeing things that aren't there?" And It was horrible to witness someone, especially because I know the child, and I had actually referred Mum to go to OTAR to have the assessment done, saying, you know, these guys are awesome when it comes to early identification. If you're wanting an answer, these are the ones that you need to take them to. And she then, this paediatrician not signing off on it, it made her tear her hair out. And it was almost like she was accusing her of Munchausen's, you question yourself.
You do.
When things like that happen. You know, you've got one lot of specialists saying, "Yep, definitely." And then you've got another lot going, "Nah, you're crazy.
Yeah,
that's not how it is." And, that's not a good thing. Finally, Mum actually then went to another paediatrician who specialises in autism here in Bendigo, and he signed off on it straight away.
Yeah.
So it's funny. It's funny that, well, not funny, ha-ha, but I guess funny concerning that we have these doctors who are so readily able to reverse that diagnosis once it's done, which then means you miss out on the funding and you miss out on the supports that are needed, because you were saying that he was exhibiting challenging behaviour.
Absolutely.
So were you getting any support whatsoever when it comes to that?
Every time that we went to see someone, you know, a doctor or a paed when we were living in Melbourne, they would all say to me, "It's because he's very intelligent." No one had done a test, but he's a very intelligent boy. I didn't know he was my first.
Yeah, and I didn't know the difference. I was the same.
You know, it was the normal. I didn't know any different. It was normal for him to know those things at that age. And so, yeah, it was hard. It was disappointing when we... You know, I've spent 6 months, you know, getting this diagnosis, and therefore was too late getting funding because it took so long to get the diagnosis, to then be told, "No, I don't agree. You need to go and, you know, see this person and go and see this psychologist." And, you know, thankfully the psychologist that we were put onto was Aaron Grieve, and he was...
Oh, I love Aaron.
Same.
And do you know what? All the Bendigo mums listening now would all be going, "Oh, Aaron."
Yeah, he's been fantastic, and, you know,
he's wonderful.
We give him a lot of credit. Our life wouldn't function without him and his strategies, so kudos to him. But it wasn't until I got onto the right people, so we ended up obviously leaving that paediatrician.
Yeah.
And we now go down to the children's and see a fantastic paediatrician down there.
Yep.
Dr. Efron, who specialises in kids with behavioural issues.
I've heard of Dr. Efron.
And, yeah, we find him to be fantastic. And I walked in to see him, first appointment, explained what I've just explained to you, our situation, and he you know, went through all of the paperwork and had quite a good chat with Cody, and then we got our full list of diagnosis, which is quite long.
Yeah. So, okay, do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
So he has epilepsy.
So he has epilepsy, and which we think he may have outgrown now, but we still have to sort of...
So he's not having seizures anymore?
He's been seizure-free for 3 years.
Isn't that wonderful?
Which is fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he has Asperger's or ASD now. He has oppositional defiant disorder.
Mm-hmm.
He has ADHD and he has anxiety. So he's got quite a lot.
Yeah, but he's still beautiful.
Yeah.
And also, later on, I want to talk about all these wonderful achievements that he's actually, because he's awesome. And I know one of the things we like to do on the show is actually bust a lot of myths when it comes to autism, because there's a lot out there. And I tell you what, your son is a walking myth buster when it comes to things such as sport and, you know, he's just an amazing young man. He really is. I see big things for his future. So whilst all this was going on, just looking at the time, thinking, oh, should we take a break? No, we'll just talk. I'll ask you one more question, then we'll take a music break. Whilst all this was going on, he was being assessed and you weren't able to get that diagnosis and everything. He started school.
He started school.
So he would have gone into school with no supports.
No, there was one aide in prep. There was one aide in the classroom who sort of did work with him. At that stage, the seizures had started.
Okay.
And so the focus was on the epilepsy.
Yeah.
The behaviours weren't as bad at that stage.
Yeah.
They were there, of course, but at that stage I didn't know any different, so I just thought he was just being naughty.
And then you have another son who's typically developing.
Yes.
Is he older or younger?
Younger.
Yeah. And so was he aware of all of this going on, or was he too young to realise that this was all going on?
He was probably too young.
Yeah.
Because he was only two when Mum passed away, so he would have only been three when Cody started having seizures.
Yeah.
So probably a little too young to realise.
Yeah. He's just gorgeous too. So with getting back to school, so obviously the focus was on the epilepsy.
Yeah.
Was he getting any kinds of supports when it came to the behaviours or anything at school?
Not really.
No. And then I do know that you had to change schools.
Yeah, so we had to change schools, but again, that was due to the epilepsy side of things, just with staff not understanding that... telling me that it's on a need-to-know basis and teachers don't need to know that my son was epileptic wasn't really good for me.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I removed him from that school and put him into a different school.
Yeah, and then he was placed into a little country school with not a lot of kids that, so how many schools has he actually attended?
Up to date now?
Yeah. She's counting on her fingers.
We're in our fourth school now and he's in grade six.
Holy moly. Do you believe that schools need to be more open to parents when they come and
Absolutely.
Say... Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Okay, so you removed him from the first school and you placed him into the second school,
who were fantastic for 2 years. Mm-hmm. We had a wonderful teacher who just got him.
Yeah.
And that was when we were... then getting the diagnosis of Asperger's and going through CAMS.
Yeah.
And so that's when the bad behaviours started to come out. Now, she kept him really well supported for the 2 years that he was in her grade, and it wasn't until we then went into a different year level with a different teacher that...
things sort of went...
spiralled downwards and the behaviours elevated.
Did he have the diagnosis by then?
Yes.
And so then he was removed from that school?
So I ended up having to remove him from that school. We had done a lot. They had tried to... they'd brought in Mansfield Group. As a parent, I learnt a lot from the Mansfield
travelling teachers.
Yes.
Is that when you met Paul Keller?
That's when I met Paul Keller.
We've spoken about Paul quite a bit. I'm actually trying to get him on the show, so if he's listening, Paul.
Yeah, come on over. So that's when I met Paul. So I learnt a lot as a parent then too.
Yeah.
So then we had to pull him out because...
just wasn't working.
It wasn't working. He was absconding and running up the street and it wasn't
And because
safe.
You live so far away from the school, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it was a half-hour drive for me to get back to the school. So we pulled him out. We had other things happening as well. At the time, I was caring for my dad who was dying of cancer, so I was trying to deal with that as well. So we just felt, we had a meeting with the school and just felt that maybe it might be best if we removed him and put him somewhere closer to home.
Yeah.
So then I chose to put him into
a little bush school almost. Yeah. How many kids did they have at that school?
80 to 100.
And how many have special needs?
I think there's 24.
Okay. So how many aides has the school got?
There's a junior unit and a senior unit. So you've got 2 to 3 in the junior unit and there was 2 in the senior unit.
Okay, for 20-something kids.
Yeah.
Cool.
They need a lot more help. So then that's...
Yeah, and so did he do all right, though, in that first year at this little bush school? You can be honest or if you don't want to. It's
no,
fine.
Not really.
No.
It's been 3 years of hell, I'll put it that way.
Yep, okay. And now he's just started.
I've just started in 2 weeks ago. I've had to pull him from that little school. For discrimination reasons.
Yep.
So I've put him into another school, which I think has 500 or 600 children.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know numbers on AIDS and things like that because we're only new. But it's been an absolute godsend. Amazing. I've got a happy child. I've got
I have to agree with you because I actually saw your child yesterday, both of your children. Yes. Who have both started at this school, and it's a change. They're like different kids.
Yeah, they are. It's amazing.
It's just and the support that
it's
they're getting
huge.
and the fact that the principal is open to listening.
Yes.
To the parent, which makes a huge difference.
It does. And he gets it. For me, it's about finding people who actually understand that my child isn't like every other child.
Yeah.
He's different.
Yeah.
And accepting that and not judging that and not blaming him for behaviours he can't control.
Yeah.
That's been our biggest...
And they've already started because in amongst all of this, because I've had Julie Phillips, who's a disability advocate, on the show a few times, and we talk about this quite a lot when it comes to mainstream education, is... the fact that when a child who has a diagnosis of autism exhibits behaviour that they deem challenging, a lot of these schools seem to go for the child blaming or the parent blaming side of things.
Yeah.
But they don't look at why the behaviour is occurring.
Yes.
What is happening before?
What sets it off?
Yeah, what sets this off? And the only way that you can sort of do that, unless you've got a super amazing teacher that is so observant and can work it out like that, is a functional behavioural assessment where a behaviouralist comes in and observes the behaviour, observes the child in their school environment, and they see what it is that could be triggering these behaviours and could be triggering these moments of anxiety, and what are those strategies that are needed for the teacher to implement so that the child's educational experience is a good one.
Yep.
Do you find you're getting that at this new school? You've been there a couple of weeks, but from what I'm gathering, they're already starting these processes.
Yep.
That should have been done when he was in prep.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are, they're following strategies that we've had put in place from our specialists, psychologists, GP, paediatrician, Paul Keller.
Yeah.
Who's had a lot to do with us and my son in
Because Paul now works, he's no longer at Mansfield,
he now works for the Department of Ed. Yeah, and has still had done training with previous schools that we'd been at, so we've sort of had dealings with him at 2 of the schools and this will be the 3rd. So, this school's just, they're listening and they're putting these strategies in place and they're asking questions and they're happy.
And they're listening to you too.
And they're listening and asking me questions.
And they know how to write behaviour management plans.
Yes, they do.
With measurable outcomes, which is good because that's what we need. I'm so glad to hear that he, because what a harrowing journey.
It's been hard.
So when you finally got that diagnosis,
yeah.
did you just go, I knew it?
In the end, I did. Yeah. I knew that he was different. I just didn't know to the extent.
Yeah.
As I said, I thought it was just an ADHD, being that I've got two nephews who were both
diagnosed. Some people do get that, though, and that's the thing.
So it's what I was expecting. Yeah. I wasn't expecting. And to be honest, I didn't know much about the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a very big learning curve. And
yeah.
And hard when you get a diagnosis, and I know a lot of people, I've met a lot of people with kids on the spectrum now, and I find that it's very hard when you're a new parent getting these diagnoses. The specialists don't give you any information. They just say, yes, they're on the spectrum, and you go away going, well, what does this mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I've found that I've had to do a lot of the research myself. And,
oh, but
you know,
that's the thing. They say within 6 months of a diagnosis, the parent becomes more informed than the actual specialist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will hands down give that to the parents. You know, they will go out and research the crap out of everything.
Yeah, we have to.
Well, I think, yeah.
It gives
yeah.
you a bit more of an understanding of your child and why they're doing the things that they're doing. It's, yeah. you know, you need to learn, you know. And I had a lot of people, family members, you know, friends that didn't know much about it, that, you know, we all thought he was just being naughty.
Mm.
And then you sort of learn that, okay, that's not something that
yeah.
he's able to control.
Yeah. So is he able to now sort of self-regulate when he's starting to feel?
He's starting to, which is great.
Awesome.
Where at this, I've noticed the big difference just in the 2 weeks at this school. He's, so where he was running home, because we were not far from the school, he would run home.
The third school?
This is the third school.
Yeah.
Okay. He would run home every other day, or at least leave the school grounds or run out of the classroom. In the 2 weeks he's been at this school, he's not left the school grounds. Yeah. I haven't had a phone call home, and, which is huge, because I was getting quite a few. Sometimes it could be 3 and 4 phone calls within an hour. So, you know, I haven't had that. So for 2 weeks I've not had a phone call home in regards to his behaviours. If he has elevated, they've been able to deal with it.
Yeah.
And he hasn't had any, aggressive outbursts or... So, yeah, for me, that's the complete flip side to from where we were to where we are now in 2 weeks.
Oh, I hope it continues. I really do. Because, you know, because also, I mean, here you are, you're having to transition him into a new school and he's having to transition into a new school.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're preparing to transition and he's preparing
for high school.
Yeah. So, but... we might talk about that after I play a track. Now, getting away from, because that was heavy, getting away from the heavy side of things. Oh my gosh, a friend of mine posted a song up on Facebook about a week ago, and I haven't heard it since like the early 90s. And so I thought, and I can't get it out of my head. So I'm going to play it, and then this is... Another Bad Creation with Aisha. I'm sorry, everyone, but you're not going to be able to get this song out of your head. We'll be back in a jiff.
The voice of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
Yeah. out of Atlanta, yeah, a real mentor. They kind of like remind me of me and my boys, no addiction, you know what I'm saying? So all you people out there riding your cars, listening to the radio station, or cold maxing in your living room watching this here video, check the second verse.
Phoenix FM.
And there was a bit of a lag there in between Aisha, that's another bad creation. Sorry people, but I've probably just blown your mind because you'll have that song in your head all week. Anyway, we're back in the studio with the wonderful supermum Kylie, and she's been talking about the problems that you can encounter when you're trying to get a diagnosis for your child, when you know that there's something going on, but the specialists out there just keep roadblocking you and stalling you and saying, no, it's this, and no, it's this, and, you know, but finally, you got the answers you needed.
Yeah.
I'm still getting over the fact that this child is in grade six and he's been to four schools through no fault of his own.
Yeah.
It astounds me. And he's about to transition to high school.
Yep.
Do you think he's coping well with the transition into this new school, into grade six, and then obviously at the same time, because you're doing almost like two transitions.
Yeah. I think if the 2 weeks that we've had continues to keep going on the way it has been,
yeah,
I think that this school's made it very easy for him to transition.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference between getting support and having staff that understand.
Yeah.
And not having that support and not having staff that understand the diagnosis completely.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big difference.
Because I know the current school that he's at, there is a teacher's aide there who actually has children on the spectrum, which is really good.
It's brilliant.
And it's what you need. And I do know, too, that this school in particular is becoming very much like there was a I'm still waiting to hear back from the ABC to give me permission to play the audio from an interview that they did with a mother to two twin boys. Now, these two twin boys were they had high needs, and they're non-speaking, and they're twins, as I said, and they were in an SDS school in Melbourne where they actually we're so traumatized by what happened or what the parents don't even know still because they're non-speaking. Well, they aren't actually. They have their own language, which is really interesting. And so she pulled them out and she put them in a mainstream primary school called Kilberry Valley. And Kilberry Valley is pretty much... I know Julie Phillips, who is the disability advocate that we spoke of before, holds this school in such high regard. And I sit there and I go, well, if one school can get it right, why can't others? And what this school has done is every single teacher in that school has been professionally trained in doing the degree in autism. I think you do it through Flinders University. They also have done a lot of lived experience training with people with lived experience, which I think is really important.
That's huge, yeah.
And since these boys have been at this school, and there's actually a lot of people with disability at this school, the experience has just been amazing. And the kids, the mother said the children are like different children. And I guess it makes that difference when it comes to receiving the support that you require.
Yep.
Versus not.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, your son in a very short life has experienced, from what it sounds like, a lot of discrimination.
Yep.
And a lot of those roadblocks that sort of get thrown your way, which sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks. And I guess I want to ask you this. Has he ever verbally said to you, what is wrong with me? Why do they keep treating me like this? Or to words to that effect? Has he ever blamed himself for these things that are absolutely not his fault?
Absolutely. And then at times has then, you know, spoken of self-harm because of that, because he says, well, nobody can see it from my side of things. I might as well not be here.
Oh, my gosh.
And that used to be a common...
And how old was he when he was saying these things?
So that would have been when he was maybe 8.
Oh, my God. And we're seeing a lot of that too in the community with kids that age.
Yeah.
Either self-harming or threatening self-harm.
Yeah.
Which is a huge... 8 years old.
Yeah, it's and sad.
It's sad because it's avoidable.
It is. I've found our personal experience has been that people either get the diagnosis and understand it or they don't.
Yeah.
And I think for me that's the hardest part, is finding people that actually understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And get that it's a broad spectrum and that we're not all going to have kids that exhibit the same issues.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I say it all the time. You've met one person on the spectrum. You've met one person on the spectrum.
That's it.
And, you know, your son, I mean, we talk about myth busting. He plays footy.
Yeah, plays footy this year, started this year.
Is he a star on the field?
He's doing really well. Okay. You know, I was concerned on how he would cope with, you know, kids tackling him and him not getting the ball. But I can honestly say on the field he's not had one meltdown, as I call them. He hasn't had one issue. He's, you know, when he puts his mind to it, he's quite a good tackler. So, yeah, he's doing pretty well.
Good on him. And that's good. And it's that big step as parents too that we have to take. You know, I had to do the same thing with Audrey when she wanted to do gymnastics this year.
Yep.
And, you know, for me, I sit back as a mum, I have to sit upstairs behind the glass and watch her interact with her peers, and I see some of the strange looks that some of these kids give her when she talks to them, and that hurts me as a parent, and I sit there and go, oh, why don't they get it, you know? I feel like running down and shaking these kids and go, don't you realise that this child will be the best friend that you ever have if you just open your mind a little bit?
And understand that they're a little different. They think a bit differently.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've got a daughter who loves wolves, and that's all she talks about is wolves and dinosaurs and ponies, you know. But she also has so much more to give. I know that the people that she is, the kids that she's friends with, she will be loyal to them till the day she dies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess that's why sometimes in my household we choose to surround ourselves with other autistic individuals as well as adults as well as kids, because there's just no judgment. But when it comes to the footy field, do his peers know that he's autistic?
Yes.
And they get it? They understand it?
Yeah, they do. They're understanding of
it. Isn't that great?
The club have been really good, so I can't fault them. They've been really good at trying to accept that he's a
little
bit different.
So what footy club is it? Name him.
Heathcote Junior Football Netball Club.
Awesome.
And, yeah, they've been amazing. So very understanding. And
get out there and support this club.
Yeah, there's a few kids that, you know, have issues and they're
awesome.
Really supportive, which is fantastic.
I know Strathfield Say Storm do as well, and they're brilliant. I'm seeing it becoming more and more apparent that, you know, we're seeing more and more kids getting into things like soccer and footy. And, you know, Tony Langdon, who's I speak of Tony quite often because he's one of the co-hosts here. You know, when I first met Tony, he talked about all the different kinds of sports and stuff that he's involved in. And I'm like, well, there's one myth busted, because one of the biggest things that people come out with when it comes to autism is autistic individuals don't like playing sport.
Yeah, wrong.
Okay, then. I don't know where you got that info from, but it must have come out of a Weet-Bix packet or something, because seriously, there's so much of it. And you know, with Ord, she loves gymnastics. She wanted to play basketball. We got her into a basketball team, and then as soon as she got in, she goes, no, I don't want to play it anymore.
Okay, we do basketball as well as football. So,
oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. And so what about with Cody, what are his interests? I know he loves Minecraft. Who doesn't love Minecraft? I have no idea what it means. I
can't play it.
Yeah, I can't either.
anything to do with IT-based. So he's very computer, iPad, iPod,
Has
Xbox.
He discussed with you what he wants to be when he grows up?
A gaming programmer, designer person.
We're going to have our own Silicon Valley here in Bendigo, I think, because there are so many people who are interested in that sort of thing, which is really good.
Absolutely.
That's so good.
Yeah, so that's
well, Hewlett-Packard, I know Hewlett-Packard have now just started a program here in Australia. Is it part of the Dandelion? It's called the Dandelion Program or something. Please forgive me if I'm wrong. The specialists have partnered in with Olga Tennyson, and Hewlett-Packard and specialists are going to be employing people to work in their IT departments over a period of time, adults on the autism spectrum. I think they're already starting it. They've rolled it out. And they're looking at 90 this year to employ 90 adults on the spectrum to work with them. I know Hewlett-Packard have done the same thing in Sweden, and it's just been such an amazing success. So, you know, that's cool. IT-based. I know, he's a pretty good drawer too.
He isn't a bad drawer.
His art
quite
looks
good.
Pretty
Gets
awesome.
That from his nan.
Does he?
Yeah, nan's quite a good artist. So
if we go back to when you were looking at the diagnosis and everything like that, with the, because I talk about oppositional defiance disorder, and some people don't get it.
A lot of people don't get it.
Do you get it? No. No, I was going to say, do you find that it's very hard to explain to family as well that, you know, look, he's not just being naughty. He's not doing this to be painful. This is just something he can't help.
Yeah. It is hard, because you struggle to have that that line drawn in the sand between the disorders.
Yeah.
And, you know, these kids still just do naughty things.
Yeah.
So it is knowing. I best describe it to family and friends with Cody, it's black or white.
Yeah. There's no grey.
There's no grey.
Yep.
So.
And now he has a really great relationship with his brother too.
He does.
I love his
brother. At times.
But that's what
But they're
like.
Boys and they're brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not too far apart in age. So
yeah.
But, yeah, no, they do get along really well.
And does his brother sometimes go,
yeah,
you know,
I've had enough. It's all about Cody, and I've had enough.
Yeah.
But
I had a wonderful conversation with him, though, your other son, about organising a camp.
Yes, he's very excited about that.
Yes, and it's
big topic of discussion between the two of them.
Yes, and don't worry, Penny Robinson from the ICAN network is coming to town in the last week of the school holidays, and I'm going to be discussing it more with her about, because I do know the ICAN network use the Doxa campsite in Melbourne quite a lot, and I raised the possibility of the ICAN network working with the siblings of kids on the spectrum, and they run some great programs there. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, if we link in with them, and I know we'll have more than enough volunteers. So I haven't spoken about it on the show, but obviously organising a siblings camp to Melbourne is a big thing. And with the help of Jai, we're going to make this happen for the siblings, because Bendigo doesn't have a lot of that sort of thing.
There's not. I know carers, Bendigo Health's carers support have a group for the young carers.
Yeah.
So kids that are caring for a sibling or a parent or someone in their family that Jai was linked in. But there's a we did do a book. Jai had his.
Oh, did he?
Jai was published in the book.
Okay.
But, yeah, you're sort of limited on how much time you get to do that. And they can't take a lot. And there's so many families in Bendigo that, you know, need the help. You sort of only get a little bit of the time.
It's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, having a sibling support group as well as a camp once a year, it's just, you know, and I know the boys missed out on going to camp at their last school. So, and I think they were planning on going to the Doxa.
It was a Doxa camp. They've just got back yesterday, the school.
His old school.
Yeah.
Are they doing a camp at the new school, or has that already happened?
So for Jai, my younger one, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's only a one night stay, so he'll get to go on that. I'm not sure for Cody with the grade sixes whether they do a camp or whether they've already had it.
Yeah, because it would be a real pity if they missed out.
Yeah.
And I do know ICAN Network run regular camps at Malmesbury Doxa.
Oh, okay.
For kids on the spectrum, and they have all autistic mentors and and it's closer, I guess, than Melbourne. And they do everything out there. They've got flying foxes and everything. The ICAN camps are pretty cool. A friend of mine, Daniel Giles, is one of the mentors.
Okay.
And Daniel's brilliant. And then they do camps for older individuals as well, which is pretty cool.
Fantastic.
So yeah. I'm trying to find more music. I left all my music at home. Well, I bought my iPod with the music on it, and I hadn't charged it up. So it's like, oh, really? I do that. I'm just, let's see. I'm just Googling. Let's see. You know what I'm doing? Well, hang on, let's see. If my friend Mel's listening, she's going to laugh. She's like, you're playing this again. I'm a fan of retro Janet Jackson.
Oh,
I think that's when she was good.
Yes.
And one of the things, one song in particular I find absolutely amazing for the community, and it's about being a bit different but taking control and being awesome. So I am going to play Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation.
Nice.
Yeah, we're all going to get up and dance. So here it is. Enjoy. We'll be back soon.
We are a nation with no geographic boundaries, bound together through our beliefs. We are like-minded individuals, sharing a common vision, pushing toward a world rid of color lines.
Five, four, three, two, one.
106.7 Phoenix FM.
You're listening to the voice of your community, Phoenix FM 106.7.
And we're back. And that was Janet Jackson with a bit of Rhythm Nation. And I guess, too, being a historic day today, I woke up to the news that the Supreme Court in America has now passed legislation for same-sex marriage in America. So, in I guess celebration of that, because I have a lot of autistic friends who are gay, here is a song for you, Lady Gaga, Born This Way.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M-M-M-M-M-M. Just put your paws up, 'cause you were born this way, baby. My mama told me when I was young, we're all born superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on, in a glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far. Just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Give yourself prudence and love your friends, so we can rejoice your truth. In the religion of the insecure, I must be myself, respect my youth. A different law is not a sin. Believe capital H I. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, you're black, white, beige, Chola, descent. You're Lebanese, you're Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast, but leader teased, rejoice and love yourself today, 'cause baby, you were born this way.
No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, Chola, or Orient, mate, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born. Be brave.
voice of your community, 106.7 Phoenix FM.
And that was Lady Gaga with Born This Way. Hey! So, sitting in the studio joining Kylie and I, and just so people know, I have, I'll tell you what, I'll be really peeved if you've only just tuned in to listen, because I've been interviewing one of the most amazing women, Kylie, talking about her beautiful children, Cody and Jai, and the fact that she had a bit of a struggle to get Jai, not Jai, Cody diagnosed, but things seem to be looking up for Cody and for Jai, who are now in a very supportive environment at their school, and looking to the future, which is really, really cool. And you know, obviously, Codes is focusing on his IT and stuff, and Jai's helping me with a camp for siblings, which is really cool. And you know what? Also, something you need to think about for the boys is that they run a youth radio program here.
Okay.
And they train and everything. And we actually have a lot of kids that come in here, and they learn to use the decks, and they, you know, they learn about radio production and stuff like that. It's really cool.
That might be something that they'd like.
Yeah, just something for you to think about. Mm. There you go. Now, we've got about 8 minutes or so to go, and before we head off to, you know, that other show that's on after us. Brendan O'Brien's For the Love of Music. See, I said it, and I said it nicely. I want to talk just, I want to go back when I was, before you came in the studio and everything, yes. Kylie, I was talking about neurodiversity.
Yes.
Now, neurodiversity and neurodivergence is something that is becoming bigger and bigger in the autism community. We have different kinds of thinkers, thus meaning they are different kinds of learners. And with some of the, I guess, when we talk about those different kinds of learners, it's basing the way that kids on the spectrum are educated on their strengths. So in your son's case, it would be looking at the IT side of Absolutely. Things and obviously the Minecraft side of things. And you told me something really exciting about Minecraft and your boy and his new school. So yeah. So they're going to be
organising a Minecraft lunchtime
club.
Yep, at school.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know,
super excited.
See, and that's the thing, we want to get the kids excited about going to school.
Yeah.
They want to go to school.
Yeah.
And from the sounds of things at his previous schools, he didn't want to go to school.
No,
because
not at all.
It's not just about learning, it's about enjoying it. And,
yeah.
You know, because if you can't enjoy school,
you don't want to be there.
Well, no, especially, you know, I know me, I was miserable because all they did was give me maths classes, and by the time I hit about year 9, year 10, all I did was wag. Every time I had maths, I wagged. I was at every single drama class and every single arts class, but give me maths. And then I left school at the end of year 10, and we're seeing that a lot, because we're seeing a lot of kids who are getting this one-size-fits-all model of education, and it's not working, and we need these schools like Kilberry Valley and like your son's current school
yeah.
that are going to tailor an education program to their needs and you know, make accommodations for certain things, and we call them reasonable adjustments in the education department field.
Yeah.
But I think that this movement or, you know, this neurodivergent side of education is becoming more and more popular, because it's not just for kids who think differently. It can be used on every child out there. And I recommend, Thomas Armstrong wrote a book called Neurodiversity in the Classroom. Anyone who's wanting to find out more about it, get a copy of this book. It'll grab you from the first page, and you will read from cover to cover. He covers all different types of learners: autistic, Down syndrome, intellectual disability. But when I say keep your mind open, look at it too. If you've got typically developing children, look at how much that framework would actually work for them as well. Start teaching, you know, if you're going to look at a one-size-fits-all model of education, maybe it needs to be more flexible.
Absolutely.
So that's just me. Anyway, right, guess what? We're at the end of the program. We've got probably about 4 minutes. Did you want to send out anything to the kids or anything? Because they're in Melbourne.
They are in Melbourne, off to their first AFL game with their dad and their grandfather.
Fun.
So they'll be very excited. So hi, Cody and Jai and Sean. And they're going to see Hawthorne Essendon.
Oh, that should be exciting.
Yeah. I'm not a huge footy fan.
Can you tell I'm not
me
either?
Can't stand it. But they love it, so
yeah, exactly.
They have a great day with Dad.
And that's the thing, if they love it, then you have to love it. It's like Minecraft. Yeah. If they love it,
yep,
we have to love it.
That's it.
I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, my son's just rediscovered Thomas the Tank Engine.
He has.
And he says, oh, Mum, do you love Thomas? I'm like, if you love it, sweetheart, I love it. And then inside I'm going,
no, turn it off.
Turn them off. They're driving me crazy. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Please come back and join us again. We would love, do you know what? I would love to have Cody on the show.
Sure.
Especially, you know, I'd love to have him in here with you just talking about stuff, you know.
Minecraft.
Stuff, Minecraft, whatever. I'm sure he'd love it. I'd love to have Jai in as well because they are, I'm not kidding you guys, if you're listening, these kids, you've just got to meet them. They're absolutely awesome. Awesome kids. So you've done an amazing job, even though the start was
a bit tough.
Mate. But they're great kids.
Thank you.
Hats off to you and Sean. They're great kids. So thank you for coming on
and giving up
your Saturday morning. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy your first week of school holidays, people. I say that with tongue in cheek. Anyone who says that they can't wait for the school holidays, they are lying. Okay. I'll catch you all next week. Have a good one. Bye. Bye, Kylie.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's all for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll be back next week with more Real People Talk Autism. Until then, take care and goodbye.